Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to, you know, pull out the essential stuff you need to stay sharp. And today, we're kind of tearing up the old roadmap for success.
We are. We're digging into David Epstein's book, Range, Why Generalists Triumphed in a Complex World. For years, the common idea, right? That famous 10,000-hour rule. Mm. It told us early specialization, tons of focus practice. That was the only way to get really good.
Yeah, the only way. But Epstein, he really pushes back hard on that. He argues that this formula, well, it's just dangerously incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't just, like, criticize the specialization idea. He brings a lot of evidence showing that in the real world, which is, you know, messy, complex, always changing, having broad experience,
right,
thinking diversely, connecting dots between different fields, that's actually much more valuable than just that narrow, deep focus.
And it feels incredibly relevant right now, doesn't it? I mean, with technology, especially AI, taking over so many specialized, repetitive jobs, what makes us valuable as humans, it's things like adaptability, creativity, being able to take an idea from one place and apply it somewhere totally new.
That conceptual knowledge transfer he talks about.
Exactly. That's the generalist's edge in the 21st century. It really is.
So who is this guy, David Epstein, telling us all this counterintuitive stuff?
Well, it's interesting because Epstein himself is kind of the perfect example of the generalist he writes about.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's a top science journalist, an author, but his background is super varied. He's got a master's in environmental science.
Right.
But he really made his mark as a senior writer at Sports Illustrated and then doing investigative reporting for ProPublica.
Oh, okay. That's quite a mix. Environmental science, sports, investigative journalism.
Exactly. And that breadth is so important. He wasn't just stuck in, like, one academic silo. He had the reporter's instincts, the scientific grounding, and this really wide view. It let him pull together research from all over, sports science, medicine, you name it.
Which gave him the tools to actually question those simple stories we all hear about success.
Right. And his previous book, The Sports Gene, sort of set the stage. He was already looking into athletic performance and realizing, hey, maybe this early specialization story isn't even the whole truth in sports, the place where we see it most clearly.
Okay, so that background makes sense. It lets him build up to the book's really famous metaphor, the one that kicks everything off, Tiger Woods versus Roger Federer.
Yes, they're like the perfect symbols for the two approaches. Tiger is the classic specialist model, right? Golf from age 3. Super focused, deliberate practice.
The 10,000 hours personified.
Pretty much. And then you've got Federer. His path was much more winding. He had this long sampling period, played tons of different sports, skiing, wrestling, basketball, you know. He didn't really focus just on tennis until he was like 14.
So Epstein uses this contrast to talk about the two kinds of environments we live and work in. The Tiger model, he says, works great in what he calls kind learning environments.
Right. Kind environments are predictable. Think about chess or playing classical piano, maybe target practice.
Okay.
They have really clear, stable rules. You see the same patterns over and over, and you get immediate, accurate feedback. You make a mistake in chess, you know it right away.
And if you put in the hours there, you generally get better. It's reliable.
It is. But, and this is the big but, most of real life isn't like that. Think about starting a business or a doctor, diagnosing a really complex illness, scientific discovery, even just navigating modern life.
Uh-huh.
Most of that happens in wicked environments.
Wicked environments. Okay, what defines those?
They're messy, unpredictable. The rules might change while you're playing the game. Information is often incomplete. And the feedback you get, it might be delayed or it might be really unclear whether you did the right thing or not.
I see. So in those situations, just having deep, narrow expertise can actually backfire.
Yeah, it can lead to what he calls cognitive rigidity. You get stuck in your ways. That's where the generalist's ability to think across different areas to make connections, that becomes your superpower. It's crucial for adapting.
Which means the book is basically trying to, like, free us, free the reader from feeling like they have to specialize super early and just go deep.
Exactly. It's saying that building breadth, exploring widely, that's not wasting time. It's actually building your most valuable long-term skill.
Okay, let's dig into that difference between wicked and kind worlds a bit more, because it seems really central.
It really is fundamental. And it's easy to fall into the trap, right? Using strategies that work great in chess.
In a situation that's totally not like chess.
Precisely. That's the danger. In chess, pattern recognition is king. The 10,000 hours makes perfect sense. But then Epstein brings up this really powerful and tragic example, the Man Gulch firefighters.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about that. These were elite specialists, right?
Smoke jumpers.
Trained for very specific fire scenarios.
Highly trained. But they got caught in what's called a blow-up, a fire that behaved in a way that was totally new, completely outside their training and experience.
A wicked environment problem.
The ultimate wicked environment problem. And they couldn't adapt. They couldn't bring themselves to drop their familiar tools, their standard procedures, even when it might have saved them.
So their specialized training actually worked against them in that novel situation.
Tragically, yes. It's a stark example of cognitive entrenchment failing when faced with true novelty.
Wow. Okay, so that really drives home why having that sampling period early on is so important. If the world throws curveballs, you need a wider range of experiences to draw from.
Absolutely. And the research backs this up again and again. That period where you try different things, sports, instruments, subjects in school, it's not wasted time. It's how you learn about yourself, figure out what you like, what you're good at. And it often leads to better results in the long run compared to specializing too early.
Which connects directly to his idea of match quality. This is a big one.
Huge. We hear so much about specializing to become good at something, but Epstein flips it. He says finding the right fit is more important.
The fit between what? Your skills and interests?
Yeah, your abilities, what actually motivates you, and the path you choose. Finding that optimal match.
And you can't really know what fits best unless you try a few things first.
You just can't. The sampling period is how you collect the data on yourself. Where do your skills and your passions really line up? And finding that great match quality, that genuine interest, that's a much better predictor of sticking with something and succeeding long term than just getting an early start in something that might not be right for you.
Okay, but let's push back a little. If we all just sample forever, do we ever get really good at anything?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there a danger of being like a jack of all trades, master of none? When does deep expertise actually matter?
That's a really fair point. And Epstein isn't saying deep expertise is bad or unnecessary. Not at all. He's saying the engine of breakthrough, especially in complex fields, often comes from outside that deep expertise.
Okay. So it's about how innovation happens.
Exactly. Which brings us to what he calls the generalist's true superpower, analogical thinking.
Analogical thinking, like finding connections between seemingly unrelated things.
Precisely. Seeing the deep underlying structure that connects two problems or fields that look totally different on the surface.
Can you give an example?
His go-to example, and it's a great one, is Johannes Kepler back in the 17th century. He was trying to figure out how planets move. He wasn't just looking harder at the astronomy data. He was pulling in ideas from magnetism, from optics, even, famously, from musical harmony.
Music theory. Seriously.
Yeah. He used analogies from music to develop his laws of planetary motion. It shows how breakthroughs often happen when you import an idea from a completely different domain.
So sometimes, knowing too much about the standard way of doing things can actually block you from seeing a new solution.
It can. It leads to that cognitive entrenchment we talked about. You get stuck in the rut of expertise.
Which connects to the outsider advantage, right?
Perfectly. This is where he brings in that fascinating research by Philip Tetlock on expert prediction. Tetlock studied political and economic forecasters for years. He found two types of thinkers.
The hedgehogs and the foxes.
That's them. Hedgehogs are the specialists. They know one big thing really deeply. Foxes are the generalists. They know many little things and are better at stitching together different perspectives.
And the foxes, the generalists, were better predictors in complex situations.
Consistently better, especially in those messy, wicked domains. Their breath made them more cautious, less prone to bias, better able to handle uncertainty.
Whereas the hedgehogs, the deep specialists,
often got overconfident. Their deep knowledge sometimes created blind spots. They couldn't see the forest for the trees.
So if you're trying to build a team to solve a really tough, novel problem,
you absolutely need that cognitive diversity. You need people who don't all think alike. You need that outsider perspective to challenge the assumptions everyone else takes for granted.
Okay, so pulling all these threads together, if we want to apply this range philosophy, what are the, say, three big takeaways for our daily lives, for our careers, how we learn, maybe how we raise kids?
All right, three big ones. First, and this one feels really freeing for a lot of people, is reframing quitting. Strategic quitting is a skill.
Instead of just grit uber all.
Exactly. We lionize persistence, sticking it out no matter what. But Epstein shows that really successful people often try a lot of things and quit many of them. They have high quit rates. They're not failing. They're strategically ditching paths that aren't a good fit, that don't have good match quality, to find something better.
That's a powerful mindset shift.
Yeah.
So if you feel stuck, maybe changing direction isn't weakness. It's actually smart data gathering. You're optimizing for fit.
You got it. Second big theme, embrace desirable difficulties in learning.
Desirable difficulties. That sounds unpleasant.
Huh. It feels unpleasant in the moment. We like learning to feel easy, efficient, fast.
Sure. Quick results.
But the research shows those easy methods often lead to shallow learning. Knowledge that's stuck in one context that you forget quickly. Slower, harder methods like switching between different topics when you study or spacing out your practice sessions or really wrestling with a problem before looking up the answer.
Yeah, the stuff that feels like pulling teeth sometimes.
That's the stuff. It feels less efficient short term, but it builds deeper, more flexible, more durable understanding, knowledge you can actually use in new situations.
So prioritize deep learning over just fast cramming, even if it feels harder.
Right. And the third key message is that this range, this breadth, it doesn't just happen. You have to cultivate it. Range is built, not given.
You have to be intentional about it.
You do. You need to be what Epstein calls a deliberate amateur. Keep exploring things outside your main field. Maintain that beginner's mindset. Actively seek out diverse ideas and experiences.
Like those Nobel Prize winners he mentions.
Exactly. The finding that Nobel laureates are dramatically more likely than their peers to have serious hobbies in the arts, playing music, acting, writing, visual arts, is so telling.
So your side projects, your hobbies,
yeah,
they aren't just distractions.
They're cognitive fuel. They're building your capacity for analogical thinking. They're giving you tools you can bring back to your main work.
Man, Epstein really nails some of these ideas with memorable phrases. The book is full of them.
It really is. Let's pull out a few core ideas, sort of like quotes that capture the essence.
Okay. One that really hit me about finding your way was, we learn who we are in practice, not in theory.
Mm-hmm. You can't just sit and think your way to the perfect career or life path. You have to actually do things, try things out.
Your hands dirty.
Yeah. And how about this one? Thinking about the future of work in AI. The more constrained and repetitive a challenge, the more likely it will be automated.
Oof. Yeah.
While great rewards will accrue to those who can take conceptual knowledge from one problem or domain and apply it in an entirely new one.
That's the economic case for range right there. Adaptability pays.
It is. And then there's the call for patience, especially relevant in our hyper-competitive culture. Compare yourself to yourself yesterday, not to younger people who aren't you.
Oh, that's good. Resisting that pressure for early achievement, that feeling of being behind.
It's about your own journey, your own pace of discovery. And finally, back to learning. The most effective learners engage in desirable difficulties.
If it feels too easy, maybe you're not learning deeply enough.
Could be. A little struggle is often a sign of progress.
So let's make this super practical. How can people listening actually put this generalist thinking into action?
Okay, for career development, the big shift is to see your career less like a ladder and more like, well, an extended sampling period.
Stop trying to map out the perfect 5-year plan.
Maybe loosen the grip on it, yeah. Be open to moving sideways, taking on projects outside your job description, anything that exposes you to different kinds of problems and different ways of thinking. Those seeming detours might be where you build your most valuable skills.
Okay, makes sense. What about for education or parenting?
Resist the urge and the societal pressure to push kids into specializing too early. Let them explore broadly, multiple sports, different instruments, diverse subjects. The goal, especially early on, isn't mastery in one thing. It's building the skill of learning how to learn and helping them discover that all-important match quality.
Finding what lights them up.
Exactly. And finally, if you're leading a team or hiring for innovation, think about cognitive diversity. Don't just hire clones of your existing team, even if they have the perfect resume for the specific task. For tackling really complex, wicked problems, you need different viewpoints. You need that outsider advantage. Think about Nintendo. They deliberately used older, withered technology, but combined it with novel gameplay ideas. That's lateral thinking.
That's a great example. You know, what really struck me reading this was just the sense of relief. Almost.
Relief? How so?
Just the idea that maybe my own winding path, you know, jumping between interests, being curious about lots of different things, maybe that wasn't a flaw or lack of focus. Maybe it was actually building strength. It gives you and everyone permission to explore, to change course, to trust that the messy process of discovery is okay. It's more than okay. It's valuable.
I totally agree. For me, the biggest shift was how I think about expertise itself. We're taught to worship deep specialization, but Epstein makes such a strong case that for navigating complex, uncertain futures, we need to be, well, a bit skeptical of narrow expertise, especially when it comes to prediction.
Mm-hmm.
The truly crucial skill seems to be the ability to integrate knowledge from many sources, to connect those dots that the specialists standing too close might not even see.
The adaptable explorer, not the entrenched expert.
That's it exactly. The future really does seem to belong to the adaptable explorer.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.